This is Chris Evans with the Storage Unpacked podcast. I'm here with Martin. How are you, Martin?
Yeah, not too bad. We've had some decent weather recently. It's a bit cold.
It has been cold, yeah.
But some beautiful sunny days to get out and have a walk, and flowers are starting to come out in this country. It's probably global warming, but hey.
Yeah, springtime, isn't it? It's almost just about. Yeah, it's good to be out and about. We just have to see how it goes.
Yeah.
Enjoy the summer coming up.
I'm back in the office a couple of days a week, so beginning to see human beings again. It's all a bit of a shock.
Yeah. I'm not sure I'm ready for that yet. Anyway, enough of that conversation. Let's dive into our topic of the day. So today we have a sponsored podcast. We're going to talk to Vast Data about an announcement they've made in the last, the last couple of days, really. And to do that, we've been joined by George Axberg. So George from Vast, please tell us what you do for the company and give people a bit of your background so we can dive into the topic of the day.
Thank you so much, Chris and Martin. Pleasure to be with you today. Again, my name is George Axberg, and I am the Vice President of the Data Protection Division at Vast Data. I've been with the company for about exactly 100 days and look forward to spending some time with you today talking about our solutions at Vast Data.
Excellent. So you said something very interesting there. Data protection, Vast Data, not something we necessarily have heard about so far, but you do have an announcement around that, don't you?
Yeah, we've got a lot of great things going on, Chris. And, you know, in the 100 days I've been here, we've done a tremendous amount of work around validation with many different ISV partners. And, you know, that work has been somewhat painstaking to get off the ground, but wow, we've done some great things in a short amount of time. We've got validation work done with Rubrik, Veeam, Spectrum Protect, individual application direct owners. But today we wanted to highlight our newfound agreement and partnership with Commvault.
Okay, excellent. So we'll get into the detail of what that means in a little while, but obviously, you know, let's frame it around that and dig down into the data protection discussion in it, you know, in more detail. Because I think people might not necessarily, first of all, think about Vast in terms of the data protection market, but obviously not really maybe have understood how data protection requirements have changed over the years. And they're very different to what you would have looked back at and say 15, 20 years ago when VTLs were the big thing, probably, you know, early 2000s. The world's changed quite a lot, hasn't it? So the requirements for data protection have moved on and the technology's moved on too.
Yeah, without a doubt. Even if you think back, like you said, even 5 years ago, there's been just a tremendous amount of change and influx within our market today. But, you know, sure, you go back 10, 15, 20 years, you know, with tape migrating to backup to disk, you know, vanilla disk, if you will, and then VTLs coming to market, then eventually the purpose-built backup appliances that made data deduplication and compression table stakes for everyone, had to have it. The issue with that, and where we've kind of migrated to, Chris and Martin, is there's really no consolidation going on. If anything, it's kind of gotten, you know, somewhat sprawled and out of control. Because if you find in most enterprises, most larger customers around the globe, they're still using all those different platforms and scenarios for data protection. They haven't found a way to consolidate. And so you end up with tiers in backup. And it's funny, I always used to think of backup, and I guess we still should, as a copy, or even some people would relegate it to tier 5 storage, hopefully not often leveraged. But now today, that's quite frankly changed quite a bit.
Mm. I'm just going to mention something here to Martin that you just completely made me think of it, which I think is an important factor. And you use the term there, people think of backup as a copy. Actually, in some respects nowadays, backup is an individual type of data in its own right, in the sense that it represents a point in time which you may have to go back to because of ransomware, Martin. You know, it's no longer a case of thinking, oh, it's okay, we've got plenty of backup copies, we'll just find one that works. We have to be a lot more prescriptive about that now, don't we?
We do a bit. And what we've also found is, I mean, CDP is becoming more and more of a thing, continuous data protection. So you're going to want faster and faster systems to allow you to roll back to a particular point in time, whether it's a ransomware attack, malformed transaction, something you want to see what's going on. So yeah, it's not just a copy which you take every night.
Fast restores, George, interesting. You know, that's a challenge, I think, that people probably don't always think about. You know, we back our data up, but actually in reality, what we want to do is get it back quicker. Then we back it up potentially, because the only time we actually want to restore it is if either we're using it for some recovery purpose that's highly important to the business, or we're doing some sort of process where we're testing it or other sorts of things. So waiting hours and hours and hours for a restore is no longer an acceptable position to be in.
Yeah. And, you know, you've described a little bit of an issue that I think we've all seen kind of grow over the last, you know, 5 to 8 years. And that's, there's other copies of data outside of the backup, right? The application users are not necessarily always relying on the data protection folks for their copies. So, you know, those with the most, you know, significant applications, the Oracles, the SAPs, are sometimes keeping their own copies, their own snaps, if you will, and restoring from them. And that also then creates maybe a little bit of a compliance issue, right? Because then you've got some copies where maybe you don't necessarily want them to be in the event of, as you mentioned, a cyber threat. So the combination of compliance with cyber, with data sprawl in data protection, whoever knew that we would say that, but that's actually the case, especially when you have larger environments based on object and cloud, that where that performance and that ability to consolidate, I think, becomes more and more important today for our customers.
Now, there's one area where, before we dive into talking about the vast technology, that I just want to touch on. And this is one I think is, it's very subtle, so I have to be quite careful about how I describe it. But we talk a lot about deduplication, and we talk about that ability to dedupe data as it comes into an appliance. And that's quite important. But I think the level and the granularity of that deduplication is important, because as you're backing up content, you potentially are creating one big random store of all of this data. And then when you do want to expire some of that, the smaller the granular components of that that you can expire, the better. For example, if you were backing up onto, say, an object store or an NFS store in 1 gigabyte chunks, and that was the minimum you could expire every time you expired something, there's a good chance you'd keep data quite a long time because there might be one or two blocks in that 1 gig that you want to keep. But if you did that at a 4K level, you'd be getting rid of stuff quite quickly. And I think that, not sure that that's really highlighted as much as it should do. And I think it's an issue with ransomware as well, because now we're going to lock snapshots and things like that. So I'm interested for both of you, let's start with George first, just to see if you see that as an issue within the design of backup systems.
I think it's more prevalent now than ever before, because let's face it, Chris, we've got multiple types of deduplication in the marketplace today, whether it be variable, various, different block sizes and lengths. There's always going to be the battle between performance and capacity. And, you know, it's really up to the ISV in many instances to help in that case. However, and I'm not sure this is the best time to mention it here with you today, is, you know, we do have the capability of doing some additional data reduction, even outside of the typical data deduplication. We call it similarity. And where we find today with most purpose-built backup appliances, for example, because they're trying to get so granular to meet those backup windows and to reduce the cost of hard drives, you'll find that that creates a complete, let's call it an unwanted, unwelcome scenario around those restores because of that granularity. So you have the management that you're speaking to and the amounts of data that you're holding within that capacity, but then just the whole act of restoring that data becomes to be extremely cumbersome, time-consuming, and in my opinion, a risk, especially in a cyber scenario.
Do you see that as being an issue, Martin? I mean, I think from a technical perspective, I think it probably is.
Well, I can see it's a technical issue, all kinds of problems I can see coming out of it. Dedupe, and minute you're talking about expiring copies, even on restores, we've got potential problems. And it's not just dedupe we see in backup systems, we also see compression as well. So you have all these jobs which are running, which aren't anything really to do with the backup process or stuff, but it's about housekeeping, garbage collection. And we've seen it in mainstream arrays as well. We've seen it with anybody with dedupe. We've seen garbage collection cause all kinds of problems in mainstream arrays. So within a backup system, which may be handling a lot more data and keeping that data for a lot longer, there is a potential overhead. Yeah, and what block size or what is your chunk size is going to be I think it almost needs to be something which for your backup systems need to auto-tune themselves. I'm not sure it's something the administrator is going to get into. And then there's a trade-off. If you've got big blocks or little blocks, if you've got little blocks, yes, you may be able to effectively get data out quicker, but that may add an overhead on your system, which you may not be that impressed with.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, all those things, that, you know, fantastic points. And I think that is a great opportunity now for us to dive down and talk about the technology, the vast technology, because my first thought when I heard that you were entering the backup arena was, hang on a second, this was primary storage. So that's, you know, how is this appropriate for data protection? And we're starting to see that discussion as we go on, George, but let's just remind everybody what the architecture is. Let me just say that for anybody who's listening, we have actually done podcasts in the past talking about the vast architecture with the lovely Howard. Clearly, the architecture itself is quite important. So could you just take us through sort of a very quick recap of what the architecture looks like, George?
Sure. Let me please do that. So when you think of vast data, we want you to think of universal storage. And it's all flash. So we're giving you the highest performant and the most scalable capacity on the planet today. So with that, if you think about a traditional storage array, and if you look at how they're constructed, there's always going to be this bondage between controllers and capacity. And the performance is controlled by the number of controllers within an environment tied to a specific amount of capacity. We've disaggregated that at Vast Data. So you could get a highly performant all-flash solution. It's QLC flash, low-cost hyperscale SSDs with next-generation erasure coding. And really what that all means is we're optimizing the flash to be the most reliable, the most high-performant as possible. But what we've done is we've disaggregated, separated the what we would call our C drives from our D drives, our cache from our data. And that gives us a tremendous amount of flexibility. And when I think about a data protection environment, and I think about purpose-built backup appliances, Chris, we've broke the mold, right? We've broke that mold of needing a certain engine with a certain amount of capacity on the backend side. So by disaggregating that, you can mix and match. You can have a certain number of C drives with a certain number of D drives. If I need more capacity, I just add D drives. If I need more performance, I just add C drives. And that gives our clients a tremendous amount of flexibility from an engineering and an architectural standpoint. But what also makes it, I think, a little bit more interesting is also from a consumption standpoint, because now that we've disaggregated the C drives from the D drives, we've also kind of brought that over to the consumption model, which allows us to disaggregate, if you will, the software from the hardware. Now, that's been done many times before. There's a lot of companies that will sell you a software-only contract and then and purchase the hardware separately. But what we've done, I think, is rather unique. We're Vast Data, as a SaaS-based company, we've separated ourselves from the hardware. It's built to our specifications. It's provided as an appliance experience to our customers and our end users through our distribution channel with our channel partners. And on the software side, we handle the software and the maintenance there. Now, what's interesting on the hardware side, and I think that you would appreciate this, Chris and Martin both, is that the hardware side for us comes with a 10-year warranty. So we're really changing the game in data protection by providing a 10-year warranty. And you know, just think about what that brings to bear for our customers. We're eliminating that vicious 3-year, 4-year, 5-year maintenance renewal cycle. We're eliminating that need for that 3-year, 4-year refresh. Because by the way, our systems are backwards and forwards compatible. And just think about bringing in from a financial standpoint, a 10-year depreciation to data protection. Our customers have been asking for those for years. Because if retention for data is 7 years, 10 years, lifetime of the patient, I would think our data protection environment should mimic that a little bit closer. So we've done that on the hardware side. And then going back to the software, as opposed to buying software upfront that becomes shelfware, think about a large environment in a global account or a managed service provider where they're maybe migrating data. They're adding new customers and new clients. They don't need the utilization of all of the software upfront. You could buy our software through our Gemini procurement program in 100 terabyte increments. So Chris, I think when you think about what we're used to, we really always have to reflect on what it is that we're doing differently at Vast. And again, that disaggregation of performance from capacity, and then the disaggregation of software from hardware from a purchase and a procurement standpoint, I think is real game changing for us.
Okay, there was a lot in there. That was a great monologue, George. There's tons of different things you said in there. So I'm just going to try and pick a few of them. I think the scaling bit for me, I think, is really fascinating because it means you could decide, for example, to scale the solution for different use cases. So, for example, you could say, well, I know that my backup is going to need to be cheap and deep, so I could deploy many more disk or data shelves, if you like, of QLC NAND than I do perhaps of Optane. And it might be in a production environment where you might need a different ratio, but you can change that. And you've just highlighted the cost, how that changes from a cost perspective and from a hardware perspective. So I think that's quite an interesting one. But for me, and I think this is an interesting one, that I'm going to bring Martin in a second to ask him about this, The 10-year thing, I think, is interesting for me because, great, fair enough, 10-year lifetime, that's great. I was trying to think, if you look at a traditional purpose-built backup, what the refresh cycle is on that, how you take those out and how you move that data somewhere else when you're trying to retain that length of data, and whether you would really keep all of that data on that PBBA or whether you try and archive it to tape and have it in lots of different places. So, Martin, I mean, typically, is that a nightmare to change every 3 years, one of those sort of appliances?
Yeah, it would be. And it is. I mean, so if you look at the backup appliance as opposed to the archive world, it is always a problem because one of it actually is more a process and procedural. You need to understand your data and you need to understand your compliance and what you're keeping for what length of time. Companies are notoriously bad at that. Most of them are data pack rights. But once you have pulling out a data solution, is how do you migrate and for how long do you end up, say, with two appliances on the floor? Because you're migrating from one way, you're trying to back up into it. And you want to minimize that time, data center space, there's complexity. So, yeah, it is. But a 10-year lifespan is an interesting one. A 10-year lifespan on some of these things, the depreciation cycle of the 10 years, it will get interesting and it almost starts to feel like an OPEX model at that point. It's not, it's still a CAPEX. But the way internal accounting and costing works, that longer model may actually be very advantageous to VAST, actually.
Mm. And I think just adding to that, George, this whole idea of refresh cycles and targeting a particular set of boxes, and as Martin says, multiple boxes on the floor if you're going through migrations, your solution would just be a single global namespace. So if you're changing the technology in the back end, you're swapping drives or you're adding more drives, maybe after the 10-year lifetime or maybe a bit earlier, if you wanted to, you're refreshing some of that. It doesn't necessarily change the front end namespace. So as far as the backup protection solution is concerned, it still sees the same data on the same data plane, doesn't it?
It does. And think about that at Uber scale. We're not, most of our large enterprise accounts, they'll have multiple devices, and not just necessarily multiple devices due to replication, a site A or site B, but also multiple devices sitting alongside each other on the data center floor. And you're talking about islands of storage, islands of deduplication. And this gives us an ability, because of our exabyte scale, to eliminate that and consolidate. Again, we talked earlier about the complexity of tiering within data protection. Now it gives us the ease of use and the ability to consolidate and maybe sunset over time some of that technical debt and assets onto a single solution. So even just from a day-to-day, everyday use, there's obviously some simplicity, but just, as Martin mentioned, the cause and effect of migrations on the data and the time that it takes is eliminated with a solution at such scale.
Yeah. So can you point to anything in the actual architecture that can make anything better than, say, other types of solutions would work? You're looking at sort of random sequential writes for data coming into the platform. You mentioned the idea of a second level of dedupe. I think that's one to go back and talk about in a second. Yeah. But, generally, just what can we point to the features of the platform that actually could improve some of these?
Chris and Martin, I think one of the things, if I may, that really impressed me upon joining VAST is that restore speed. Everything we've talked about around data protection in the past, up until maybe the last few years with the prevalence of cyber, is what is our recovery time objective? And when I think of a cyber situation, which we hope for no one, if you look at some of the numbers, it typically takes on average 21 days to restore your data once you've had that hack. It costs as much as $1.85 million to still execute and get that back. Could you still be in business in 21 days? Are you able to, if you have your data sprawled across multiple platforms and multiple locations, can you really restore that quickly? So we're finding, and you touched on a little bit earlier, the way that we restore and the way that we lay the data down within the VAST cluster, it gives us an ability to restore 50 times faster than a purpose-built backup appliance. 50 times faster. And that's because those devices are built for backup and to meet a backup window. And having to reconstruct data and move data back is extremely time consuming. And then on top of that, you had mentioned, and I think it's good to go back to that, is similarity. And, I mentioned our partnership with Commvault. And, that better together scenario of leveraging Commvault's compression and deduplication, moving that data to a VAST system, scalable, right? Instead of having islands of storage, islands of deduplication, and then apply an additional level, more granular than even COMVOL, of deduplication and compression gives us reductions where we've seen numbers of as much as 2 to 3 to 1 additional reduction beyond what hits our device.
That's quite an amazing number, really, because if you think about the original, here's a bit of old history, Martin, IDRC, improved data recording capability from IBM on tapes.
Oh, yeah.
We got like, you remember that?
Yeah.
When we got like 2 to 1, you know, we were like, oh, 1.8 even, or probably actually more like about 1.3 or 1.2 or something. We were really pleased when we saw that level of compression in the hardware. And now, you know, we expect significant data reduction capabilities and platforms, but it's hard to keep on reducing data when it's been deduped at the very front end, or even if it's the sort of data that doesn't dedupe very well.
Yeah, well, obviously there is data which doesn't dedupe well, and I've spoken to Howard about this in the past. I mean, for some video or the already pre-compressed video, but these systems sometimes struggle a bit, so never write guarantees about your compression ratios until you've asked the customer what data they're storing. But when we're talking about more traditional structured data, the Oracle databases and things like that, you're going to see huge amounts of compression and dedupability, probably because every customer you'll probably ever come across is about 20 different copies of the same data stored in 20 different Oracle databases, for instance. So yeah, you're going to see a dramatic data reduction. I think that's what we've ended up talking more about, but Chris, is about your deduplication, and we're talking about compression as well. Back in the day, we really just thought about compression. That's what that was. But now we're seeing more and more clever techniques applied to the data as it's coming in to do stuff with it. So similarities and deduplication.
Yeah, the similarity one, I think, is quite clever because it's taking a different approach. It's not following that same approach of saying, well, I'd use the same techniques as other platforms do. It always has that potential. And maybe you see some savings in one place and some savings in the other. The question really, I guess, is the overall result that you get. And probably more important, I guess, George, is that it doesn't affect the operation of the system, and that you don't impact outgoing data performance by adding all of this extra technology in there.
No, as a matter of fact, we're finding that it also gives us some capabilities that have been in use before, but not, you know, thoroughly used because of the limitation on performance. Live mount recoveries, you know, being able to access data more quickly. That functionality has been available for many years, but just not, you know, typical backup appliances are just not capable of really meeting that performance requirement via vMotion. You would want to think about, what else could I use such a high-performing platform for? How about test and dev, right? You have a high-performing platform that now you could truly leverage for test and dev, as well as just traditional data protection. And then I still think there's other use cases that are going to become more prevalent with our larger scaled systems, and such as maybe a second copy for other use cases beyond backup, say like e-discovery. So we really are opening up some new avenues and of opportunity within data protection while solving the big problem of performance, especially for a critical recovery around cyber.
Okay, well, I'm going to sort of take us down a slightly different avenue here and ask about adoption models, because Martin, let's go back and think about that first discussion with Howard and when we were talking about this, how the intention is that we're expected to see one storage platform that fits everything. Now, in the data protection market, what's the first thing they tell you not to do? Don't put all your eggs in one basket. Don't be putting everything on a single platform and having that data.
You should gap it.
Exactly. So you're not going to put your primary data and your secondary data on the same platform. So I'm speaking for Martin slightly here, but I think from my respect, George, and I think from Martin as well, potentially, I'd like to see how you think this is going to work. You know, you're not going to just put a single platform in and have all of the data from both data types piling in. So are customers looking to deploy separate clusters in a different location? Are they spreading it out? You know, what are you starting to see in terms of how that adoption model is working?
Yeah, I tend to agree with yourself, Chris, and Martin. We believe that the best practice is going to, over time, be separating data protection from production. I think there'll be an opportunity maybe for some smaller test environments, or a thought about maybe remote office, back office. But I think the ultimate destination, the final destination of the primary backup copy, will be on an isolated system separate from the primary environment, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to make sense, isn't it? We're always going to keep it separate. But then there's the question about how that's distributed, I guess, Martin, you know, especially if you're trying to serve branch offices and things like that. But from my memory, I remember that the architecture here has a stateless controller front end separate from the two device types. So as long as you're within the same environment, your endpoint, but your ability to put lots of endpoints out there, as long as you can maintain the performance, is quite easy, really, I suppose. So really, you could be putting an endpoint into all sorts of different platforms, including cloud at some point, which allows you to write data into that cluster.
Well, Chris, you know, another use case that we're seeing come up with a lot of our clients around remote office, for example, is, you know, the fact is we have an S3 protocol. So there's a lot of clients that are currently today taking their data isolated and moving it off to the cloud. And then they're finding upon restore egress fees that they never anticipated. And they're looking for another solution. And you could go back to a traditional good old-fashioned spoken hub and now move those remote offices data to a primary location on VAST, get the benefit of that scalability, that single namespace, that one deduplication pool, and not having to deal with those, you know, those egress fees that you would have with a cloud provider.
Yeah, I guess I was also thinking that if you were building out, say, containerized environments, you can drop an endpoint directly into that cluster. So you could have an endpoint in the cluster that all of those nodes are writing to in terms of data protection. So what you're getting really is a flexibility of the architecture to design it the way you want.
Yeah, I would tend to agree that, you know, we're opening up, no pun, a vast amount of opportunities for our clients to think out of the box and do things differently because they were somewhat limited by what technical debt is in existence and what technologies were in existence over the last 3, 5 to 10 years.
Okay, in terms of use cases, we sort of briefly touched on, you saw some customers doing certain things. Are there anything that we can highlight that you've seen that have been different because it's a VAST system that's gone in rather than, you know, a traditional purpose-built backup solution?
Well, I think first and foremost, we should mention, and we haven't so far, is, you know, we do have the ability to have immutable snapshots and are also moving towards immutable storage, right? So outside of a traditional data protection environment, we also have to think about a zero trust environment. You could have an issue not just coming from the outside of an organization also, but from inside an organization. And I think what we found over time is data protection is sometimes the first place to be attacked because that's where they know most organizations will go to first to restore their data. So I think that's really critical and important. I think what we're finding again are people are expanding the conversation around cloud and including VAST in that conversation with the typical hyperscalers because of our scalability, but also, Chris and Martin, because of our ease of use. We have customers, one that mainly comes to mind, that has over 100 petabytes in their VAST cluster being managed by half an FTE, one less than half full-time employee. So the ease of use and management, I think, is of critical importance. One of the other things we're opening up is in the data center. You know, a lot of times you think about, you know, the performance and the capacity and the features and functionality. Just the basic saves on space, power, and cooling is really helping us quite a bit in some of the largest companies on the planet who, quite frankly, are running out of that space. And that is not a problem, you know, just in major cities. It's also a problem in the most, you know, most remote areas. So there's a lot of other things that we bring to bear that might not come out when you first take a look at VAST that our customers are enjoying and taking full advantage of, and something that we could certainly discuss further.
When you first talked about this, I was quite intrigued by the idea that you could say that you could make it cost-effective to use an all-flash system for data protection. There's an immediate assumption that all-flash for data protection, that seems like really expensive. But I guess if you've got that architecture where you can create one enormous pool of that data, and then you work with a partner like Commvault, who can give you those additional facilities that go in and query that data and can pull it back and do other sorts of things on top of that data. So this becomes not just about pure backup, but it becomes about those value adds that a decent backup platform can give you. Now you've got that ability to expand outside of that remit of just literally how fast can I backup and restore the data. So I would imagine as part of your relationship with Commvault and the other vendors, those sort of features are going to come to the front as being areas that you'll want to focus on.
Without a doubt, we feel like we enable all those other vendors that I had mentioned earlier, especially in the larger enterprise and global space, right? We fill a void for them. It's not just about the performance and the capacity. It's also about the interoperability that we're able to do together around cyber protection and cyber resiliency. So yes, without a doubt, there's more to it than traditional data protection. It's more to it than, you know, just cheap and deep flash at object price points. And I think that, you know, these companies are more than just backup companies as well. They're security companies today. They're data movers. They're management of if data is of supreme importance to them. And we kind of open up a lot of avenues and doors for them at Vast Data.
Mm. Martin, I would have guessed the assumption is that we would think that we would consolidate our production environments into a single tier. And I'm starting to hear, especially because of the way that data protection's evolved with Object Store, for example, more and more that there's a view that the data protection layer itself, the secondary side of the storage, becomes a unified layer as well. It seems to be that we're further and further just moving to putting in layers of capacity for different purposes and expecting that layer to deliver the functionality that that particular layer uses or needs, I should say.
Yeah, we're seeing pools of capacity being built for different purposes. I actually want to take it back a bit, actually, something which I think what we're seeing with Flash and companies like Vast moving into the spaces. In the data protection space, always a focus has been on backup. Not very much about restore. And actually, people don't like restoring data because it's difficult, it's painful, and it's slow. Hence, snaps become a very interesting, very exciting thing for people that they like them. In theory, they can restore more quickly. But with ransomware, this is about the real focus now has to be at restorability. We're in a situation where it's not going to be good enough to restore from a snap. You're potentially going to have to restore the whole thing. I think this is where we're going to see, certainly for that data which you consider to be absolutely critical, which your business is going to come to a grinding halt if you can't get it back quickly enough. I think that's where tools like this have some real value, is that performance. How quickly can you get this data back? Because yeah, you're going to get hit by something, because somebody's going to do something stupid.
So that changes the financial model slightly. So rather than just assuming that we're looking at this from saying it's a cost per gigabyte for, you know, using all Flash as a data protection solution, actually, in reality, what you're highlighting there, Martin, is that speed of which you get that data back, the avoidance of loss because you brought your systems back quicker, all those things have to be counted into the cost of deciding whether an all-flash solution like this is actually practical to use on a long-term basis.
Well, yeah, also the testability. Can you test your restores? Can you prove you've got a tested restore? It's painful, but if you have something which is fast enough when you can do these things quickly, and that means you can demonstrate your capability back to people like your insurance companies for providing cyber insurance. If you look at some of the terms and conditions and the caveats in that, you should be able to demonstrate your restorability. They'll protect you for a certain amount of loss of business, but if you're going to be dead in the water for 21 days and you have no way of recovering quickly, they might not be quite so happy with that. You may find that your premiums are somewhat higher.
And I think that's where this discussion, George, we're heading towards. Why do we think we would do this? This is probably an incredibly important factor in the decision, as to how you decide what platform you're going to build. It's no longer just that cost factor directly, as we just discussed. And I guess you're seeing customers thinking about that as part of what they're looking to do themselves.
To Martin's point, I mean, data protection today is playing a primary major role in DR plans. You know, it's got to be forefront of every DR test that we do today. And we're seeing that from our customers, and that's what they're asking for. The attraction is always going to be based on a price point at scale, because we're talking about an exabyte, but the performance is really the key differentiator, because how much is a minute? How much is an hour? How much is a day of downtime? How do you pick and choose which applications go first? You know, that's always an interesting conversation with the CISO in deciding on, well, are we going to concentrate on the mortgages? Or are we going to concentrate on the car loans? You know, which ones is primary to keep the business afloat, if you will? So we feel like at our scale and performance and price point, we're able to eliminate the need to try to pick and choose and just put together the best DR plan to sustain the business.
Mm, absolutely. Okay, so I think we've learned quite a lot there about the financial side of things, but maybe this is a good chance, George, to give us a bit of a summary about what we've talked about, how this partnership is going to evolve going forward, what we can expect to see, you know, why this technology's really worked well, when we can expect to see the Commvault partnership delivering, and, you know, where customers can go and find more.
Yeah, great. Well, as far as Commvault goes, we are delivering now. We have got multiple opportunities and installed accounts that we're working with currently. So the opportunity there is off and running. I'm really excited about that. And it's also fair to mention that we've expanded our distribution across EMEA to 35 countries. We've already done that in the United States and expect to see more in APJ. I think in closing, we talked about a lot of different things, and I really would want to highlight the consolidation and the simplification, if you will, of what we've kind of grown into from a data protection perspective. We're multi-protocol. We're one platform for multiple data protection use cases, all flash at the economics of scale-out object solutions. We have the additional deduplication and compression, which really is differentiating for us from a price point perspective and also from a scale perspective. And then to that scale, when you have an exabyte in your data protection environment, you really do blur the lines between backup and archive and give you the ability to create a massive pool of data at the lowest price point and at the highest performance solution available anywhere on the planet.
Excellent. Now, I will say that in the last couple of months, 3 or 4 months maybe, I have looked at a lot of different solutions. And Martin and I have talked to different vendors about data protection in the last, I don't know, the last 6 months, quite a lot. It's clear that the requirements are evolving, and the sort of things you just talked about there are really the sort of features that platforms are going to need in order to go forward. And I see, as we watch your rollout of this technology in the next 6 months, I see that the traditional sort of, in inverted commas, the legacy sort of purpose-built type solutions, the VTL type solutions, really struggling in the way this market is evolving. So I think we are seeing a genuine change in the sets of requirements. And the sort of things you've said already today, the sort of things that people are going to have to do going forward. And I think that's going to make the data protection industry interesting for 2022, Martin.
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think I'm beginning to see changes away from a number of the things. So many purpose-built backup systems and things were targeted at tape. I've seen object becoming a much more common target, for instance. Data protection has been quite boring at times. But now I think, apologies, I've got a long history in data protection. But yeah, there's a lot of chance on some innovation. And I think because we've seen these very high-profile events, these very high-profile ransomware events, I think it is now at the forefront of the C-suite. I think they're beginning to realise this is really important. Before it was insurance, and you hoped you're never going to have a call on it. But now it's really important, insurance. You are beginning to realise, actually, we are at risk.
Yeah, and you've got to do something that really protects the business rather than thinking you can always just fall back to insurance all the time. You're going to have to start delivering. It's going to be an interesting 2022 for data protection. George, I think you've given us some great introduction there, and I think we'd really love to be able to chat with you later in the year and find out, you know, what new and innovative ways that customers have used the VAST technology. But for now, thanks for your time, and I guess it's just vastdata.com, George, we'll send them to.
Perfect. And then you'll also see some other linkage to, obviously, some of the other announcements we have coming with Commvault in the next coming days. But I just want to say, Chris and Martin, thank you so much for your time. Much appreciated. We'll see you again soon.
Thanks, George.
You've been listening to Storage Unpacked. For show notes and more, subscribe at storageunpacked.com. Follow us on Twitter at Storage Unpacked or join our LinkedIn group by searching for Storage Unpacked Podcast. You can find us on all good podcatchers, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks for listening.